You wouldn't think there would be much of a connection between Radwell and the music industry, would you? Believe it or not, Radwell supports manufacturing in just about any industry you can think of, including the music industry. We have surplus stock for brands such as Sennheiser, Shure Brothers, Harman International, and many more. Because of this connection, we thought it would be fun to supplement Radwell Automation Nation podcast with a new sub-series of episodes that we're calling Radwell Rocks. These episodes will highlight interviews with musicians. Introducing our host for this sub-series, Clarence Dawson.
Greetings. Welcome to the first episode of Radwell Rocks. My name's Clarence, and I'm talking to you from the great state of Georgia. Go Dogs. Joining me today is Mr. Rob Snyder, and that is spelled S-N-Y-D-E-R. Rob's an extremely talented singer-songwriter who co-wrote the number one song, She Got the Best of Me. And we'll definitely let Rob talk about that a little later. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So I just wanted to give a little background. I met Rob 2011, Atlantic City, House of Blues. Walk in, spent 5 hours, got tired of losing money, figured I'd go spend $15 on a drink. It was Rob, the general, Mike Wayock, sitting on the stage, you know, two bar stools, and didn't know what to expect, Rob, honestly. But you started singing, and man, wow, you know, just what you convey, what you put out there, the voice. So had to meet you. Met you after the show, and then, you know, the friendship developed, and appreciate that.
Yeah, man. I mean, that was actually very, that just meeting you was actually very instrumental in kind of nudging me along to really start to chase the whole music dream, because I was, you know, I was that guy that was sitting in Westchester, PA, and my elbows on a bar just talking about it for years and years and years. And then I ended up getting a couple opening slots, and fast forward to that time I played the House of Blues opening for Jamie Johnson. And then after that, I started picking up some gigs with like the general, Mike Wayock, and all that stuff, and playing Country Lakes and just meeting all that whole crew, the Pemberton crew. And that really was a cool thing for me, just to start to meet some people and get out and practice and really try to prep myself just for moving to Nashville. And man, it was just it was definitely a big part of me, you know, because to find people that, you know, are strangers and then become friends and then they believe in you. And then that just keeps you going, because it's definitely not an easy process just to pick up and move to Nashville, Tennessee, along with the other, you know, 95 people a day that move here to try to do what I'm doing now. So it was definitely helpful.
Yeah. So Westchester, Pennsylvania. So there's some people that tell you there's only two types of music, country and Western, right? And in my mind, I don't envision Westchester being the hotbed of country music. So why country, Rob?
For me, it was really, I never grew up listening to country, really. I listened to, you know, some of it was background music. Just my parents lived in, they lived in Georgia for a little while, Roswell, Georgia. And then I guess I started to talk with a Southern accent a little bit, and they said, all right, we got to move back to Pennsylvania, move back to Philly. So I remember I had my Atlanta Braves pennant and my Atlanta Falcons pennant in my room, and my grandfather came in and kindly replaced them both with a Phillies pennant and an Eagles pennant. And it's been that way ever since. And that was when I was like 5 or 6 years old. But I do remember my dad playing Marshall Tucker, Allman Brothers, that kind of stuff. Not really, maybe a little bit of Waylon Jennings here and there, but it was never like, you know, country music. It was more of that Southern rock and some other stuff like Van Morrison, that kind of stuff that he was listening to. And, but music was always like a big part of my life. And I just went through a couple things, you know, growing up. I had a couple friends pass away. And at the time it was a thing where, radio was trying to do this thing called free FM, where they played less commercials, but there was only a few stations that signed on to that at the time. And one of them was 92.5 WXTU out of Philly. And they were playing, back then they weren't just playing like the top 40 music row Nashville popular country songs. They were playing like real country music too. And I heard Three Wooden Crosses by Randy Travis. And that song just stopped me in my tracks, because like I said, lost a few friends. and kind of struggled with that for quite a while. And it just got me writing my own songs, and they were terrible at first, but I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And then, like, you play it for your girlfriend or your friends, they say you're good. Then you play it for your parents, they say you're good. And then you play it for your parents' friends, and they say you're good. And then you go visit Nashville for the first time in 2008, and you realize that you're absolutely terrible and you have a lot of work cut out for you. And from there, man, it was just diving in and really studying the genre, like respecting the genre. And I went back to like 1943, Merle Travis, that kind of stuff, and just studied it till I was blue in the face. I had a regular job. I was working for my dad. Then I ended up doing concrete work for my buddy Tony Conjaldi. And, you know, I realized that I had to either, you know what, or get off the pot. It was like time to move to Nashville. So had another kind of tragic thing happen where I lost a couple friends to a really bad car accident. I was very lucky not to be in the car at the time. We were out at a bar having some beers and stuff. But I made a promise to one of them that night, and I said, I'm going to go do it. And then, you know, I got a horrible call the next morning, found out the news, and I was like, that's it, man. And I was like kind of asking myself, why am I still here? And that was really my driving force in finally moving to Nashville. I mean, I had more moving to Nashville, quote unquote, concerts than I think anyone has ever had. I had about like 5 or 6, and then like I was about to move, but never did. And I moved to Nashville with basically nothing. I mean, my parents helped me out here and there, but I mean, at this point I was just about to be 30 years old. I mean, pretty much, you know, I was just a very immature 30-year-old. And you know, now looking back, it feels like a lifetime later. I mean, it's 38, gonna be 39 in March, and it's just, I feel like if they call this a 10-year town, but I mean, I feel like I've been here for 30 years already. It's crazy.
Yeah, so there's a great quote from Merle Haggard that country music is about those things we believe in but can't see, dreams, songs, and souls.
Yep.
Always thought that was a great quote.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, it's, you have to, you know, it was like, there were so many different things. It was like kind of a just to prove I could kind of thing at first. And then I feel like I wore out my welcome in my hometown. I feel like my family was kind of disappointed by me, even though I know they weren't disappointed by me, but I'm a Villanova University graduate, but pretty much only because they begged me to graduate. I mean, I was there long enough to be a doctor. I was there for 7 years in the summer, and it just, school wasn't my thing. My mom worked there, so I got tuition remission, and I got to, you know, go there for free and do all that kind of stuff. But you know, I still graduated with a ton of debt because I just was like a forever freshman. You know, I just wasn't going to class. It wasn't where my heart was, and I was pretty much a lost soul at the time. About when I met you, I was just kind of just said I wanted to do music, and I was into like the heartbreak stuff and the sad stuff, because that's what my life at that point was, pretty sad, depressing. And, you know, it wasn't like this big positive story. And then it wasn't until I moved to Nashville and, you know, I moved, like I said, I moved there with nothing. I broke up a fight at Losers one night and ended up getting a job as a bouncer. And that's just kind of how I met people. And didn't really tell anyone I was a songwriter yet, because, you know, the talent level is just so high, and you're just looking around, and you just don't know anybody. And being an outsider as I was, you know, I'm a guy wearing a freaking Eagles hat walking around Nashville, and it's a totally different game. And, you know, just down to like people's accents are totally different. Now, when I talk to people from home, they're like, oh, you got your Southern accent. I'm like, I still say water. But my parents told me that they've noticed it coming back a little bit. And I guess it's just because I'm around people all the time, but they said I definitely have one when I was a little kid, when we lived in Georgia.
So was the first gig in Nashville was Tin Roof?
That wasn't my first gig. I actually started playing downtown day 4. I knew that I wanted to get downtown, play the cover songs, do all that kind of stuff. But I definitely did not care to do that. Like after the second or third gig, I was kind of over it, man. I said, this is not what I want to do. So I put a goal. I said, you know, for money right now, I will do this, but I definitely want to be able to work on my own music and my own songs and stuff like that. So it was like, I was getting to the point where I was playing. When you play downtown, you play for, I think, $40 a base pay. It's a 4-hour shift, and then you get tips, which is sad because, I mean, sometimes there's nobody down there. Right now, during this whole pandemic thing, it's like these poor guys aren't, they're not making any money. They're sitting in there. I mean, there's very limited capacity. But, I mean, I would walk out of there sometimes after three shifts with $120, and my fingers are bleeding. And I ended up, like I said, I broke up a fight at Losers, ended up getting a job bouncing there. And then I started over at Tin Roof about a year later. I started my own songwriter night called Revival. And that's where I started to become friends with a lot of great songwriters in town. And we wanted our whole thing to be, you know, just about the integrity of the songs, not necessarily like the number one songs or the, you know, the poppy stuff. It was just like real kind of country music, which was, again, another tough feat for me to do and prove because, again, I'm from, you know, Philadelphia area where there's, you know, Eagles fans, not a lot of country music. You know, it's a whole different world when you start to like look back at all that stuff. And I realized quickly it was just about being myself. And at the time I was gigantic. I was 335 pounds or whatever, and 6'5" gargantuan. So everyone was calling me Big Rob, and I was like, all right, Big Rob it is. And then, you know, since then, definitely shed some pounds and just been working at it, signed a couple publishing deals, got lucky, got a couple songs, you know, on the radio and finally growing up here at 38 plus years old here.
Yeah. So, meeting Luke Combs, that was the big moment.
I mean, it was definitely, it was a very cool moment. I mean, I have to credit my mom for that because everybody that I knew that knew Luke was saying no to him. I mean, he would go up to these bigger writers and be like, hey man, can we write? And, you know, he had this like Amish looking beard, khaki shorts and flip flops and, you know, just wasn't the stereotypical, like, this is going to be the next guy in country music. Everyone at that time, like Rascal Flatts were big, you know, they had like bleach blonde hair and frosted tips and you know, washboard abs and like those kind of things were going on. And,
Florida Georgia Line.
Luke was definitely not like that, whatsoever. And, he asked to write and I said, yeah. And, I mean, don't judge a book by its cover. And that's, again, I have to credit that to my mom because that's just the way she raised me. And, first song we ever wrote was She Got the Best of Me that went on to be a 4-week Billboard number one. So, and that was that, you know, that didn't happen overnight. There were so many things that happened in between that. Like he recorded it, put it out. Song went kind of viral, charted just even as like an independent. No one knows this guy at this point. And then he gets a record deal. They put Hurricane out and She Got the Best of Me got kind of put on the back burner. But fast forward to like a year later, he's playing in Nissan Stadium in Nashville and people are singing She Got the Best of Me as loud, if not louder than Hurricane. And then that's when the label and the management looked at each other and said, let's go back in, re-record that thing, make it sound ready for radio and put it out there and give it a shot. And then, you know, at the time that was his biggest song he had. It was 4-week number one, which just does not happen anymore. And now it's kind of like, he just can't do any wrong. Everything he's putting out, his writing level has just gone up and up and up. And, you know, it was definitely a moment when he called me to tell me that he was re-recording it. And not only that, but it was going to be a single. That was a big changing moment because once you get that, you know, single on the radio, once you get that hit, your value to publishers in Nashville definitely goes up because they see your connection with the artist. They see, okay, you can do it. And, you know, that's where you can start to make a living and change my life. I mean, I got to put a down payment on a house. And more importantly, I got to get rid of all my debt from not having any plan B and putting it all in the plan A for the, you know, 5 years prior and being in Nashville.
And since then you've signed a publishing contract, correct? And recording contract?
I signed my first deal, was with a company called Little Extra Music. That was about 3 years in. And then my second deal is with a company that Luke is actually co-owner with Jonathan Singleton called 50 Egg Music. And so I'm signed under them now in a publishing agreement. And then as far as like recording stuff, I just did a project independently, just of like singer-songwriter kind of rock and roll album that I did just to kind of, you know, have something when I play shows. Not that anyone's really playing shows right now, but whenever we do get back out there, I will have some CDs. And then I guess I have to think about the fact that no one has CD players either anymore. But either way, you can get it on iTunes or Spotify or Apple Music.
And what's it called?
It's called The Way That I Am. And there's 10 songs on there.
Yeah, it's I've heard it, obviously. You should know that. But it's introspective, I think, for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, we kind of did it in kind of chronological order. It was like, talks about, you know, from the first track, the title track, just is talking about like a relationship that gone wrong and then friend that passed away. But like, I wouldn't be the way that I am without, you know, if I could do it all over again, because like that's kind of what made me. And then it just goes through track after track, building up to meeting my now wife, Nikki, and, you know, and having the good stuff happen, and, you know, looking at life from a half full perspective instead of the half empty that I had for so long. So the next project I do will definitely have some happier stuff for sure.
So and got to perform She Got the Best of Me at the Grand Ole Opry with Luke and Channing Wilson.
Yeah, man, that was incredible. It was such a cool thing for him to do, and it kind of blew my mind. The Opry is about to be, I think, 95 years old, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around there. But no one in the history of the Grand Ole Opry, an artist, has ever invited all the songwriters to play his entire set with him. So he was the first. He brought like 8 of us up there. We each sang a verse and sang a chorus, and I was so nervous. I had my parents in. We surprised them. They were backstage. And it was so cool, man. And I actually did the ultimate no-no. I dropped a pick during the guitar solo that the Opry session player was playing. And Luke and Channing were looking at me and they're like, don't do it. Don't do it. And I kneeled down and grabbed the pick and picked it back up and acted like nothing happened. It was funny. There's a meme going around Nashville with me that says, is this guy kidding?
Did you get to go over to the circle?
I did not. I did not go to the circle. I was to the left. Luke was, sorry, my dog is bouncing around here. Tuck, lay down, buddy. Come here, bud. Come on. I'm going to let him hop up. Sorry about that. Come on. He sounds like he's 400 pounds, but he's about 85, and he's a big, goofy golden retriever. Just this USB mic is a little sensitive. All right.
So saving the circle for your own number one?
Man, I don't know. With what I'm doing, I don't really see a future in me. Who am I to say that I'm not? Because I would never have believed that all the stuff that I've had happen would have happened, because you get told no so many times. So maybe. I mean, yeah, sure. I would love to do it sometime, but I was really gearing up before this whole pandemic thing to start getting back on the road and start playing maybe some songwriter, kind of like songwriter, small halls and stuff like that. And just maybe just bring a guitar player with me and do an acoustic setting, like songwriter type show. And then I even started thinking, I was like, wow, my record kind of sounds a little bit rock and roll. So I want to see maybe if I put a band together. And then sure enough, when I actually started thinking and talking about it and putting some plan into action, that's when the whole country gets shut down. So that's on pause right now.
Yeah. COVID has changed everything for everybody in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
No matter what you do or for a living or where you're at,
man, you know, what's crazy. This is kind of off topic, but I was just thinking about it. It was like, I've always had that thing where when I see a veteran or someone in the military, it almost like I get this little feeling of regret that like it was never my thing, but like I always felt like kind of a wimp because I never did the military for some reason. And now I kind of look at everybody that what we're all going through, and I feel like we are all at some form of war mentally right now, where it's like you don't know when it's going to be over, you know, and it's just like, do you see light in the tunnel? You see light in the tunnel? And it's just like, I think it's like a mental, it's kind of like a war game in your head. I don't know. It's tough times for everybody, but I think if you come out of this, if you don't come out of this a better person and let go of the stuff that didn't matter, then you're kind of hopeless, because I think everybody has opened their eyes and reconciled a lot of differences they've had with other people, because, you know, it stopped us dead in our tracks.
Certainly agree. I would agree 100%. But you know, you got married, you're married now, you have a little girl.
Yeah. Yeah. We got married. We got married September 7th, 2019. And then we went on this incredible honeymoon. We went to Scandinavia and Iceland. And then we got back and we moved into a house, which was a huge achievement for me, because I was like forever in an apartment, and put a down payment on my first house. I was like, oh, this is great. And then found out on the 20th of December that she was pregnant. And then we had a little baby girl, Amelia Rose, on August 21st, 2020, in the middle of it all. And, you know, we've just been kind of hunkered down, and I've been writing a bit, but, you know, it's mostly like Zoom and FaceTime and all that kind of stuff. I have written in person a few times, and we had a couple COVID scares and all that stuff, just because people just still don't know. I know people, a ton of people that have had it and had no symptoms. And then I know people that, you know, had a really rough go. My mom actually had it 2 weeks ago, and she said it was like the worst headache she's ever had in her life. So scary, but she made a full recovery. So thank God for that.
Yes, sir. Good to hear. You're still doing some shows. I've still putting some stuff on Facebook and on the interwebs, correct?
Yeah, I'm doing some, you know, I did a thing called Southern Rounds. It's put on by Wyatt Durrett, who is, if you know of any like the Zach Brown hits, there's a 95% chance that Wyatt helped write it. And then he also wrote like Beautiful Crazy and a couple of other Luke Combs big songs. And he puts this thing on, and I just did one of those. And then like here and there, I just did a couple streaming kind of things.
If you had a chance to open a show for anyone, who would that one person or group be?
Man, I mean, right now, it's crazy to even think about, just because I don't know who would be. I don't think I would want to open for Luke. Definitely not, because his crowd's just wanting, like, I feel bad for the openers sometimes for him, because they're just waiting for Luke. They want them to get out of the way so he can get up there and do his thing. I think probably like a Jason Isbell or something like that. Something more on the Americana side of things.
That's interesting. Oh, interested, honestly, in what the creative process is for you, Rob. So you wake up, get a cup of coffee, take Tucker out, and then, you know, sit down with the acoustic and just start writing, or do you, you know, call up Ashley or Channing or do something on a Zoom meeting or something like that? Or what's that like for you?
For me personally, there's no rhyme or reason to it. It's so weird. It's like I have an antenna up, and it's just like whenever I sit down to just actually try to write a song myself, it's a tough thing, because I just get in my head and get in my own way. But when I go in it looking to do it for another writer or another artist per se, like I want to try to think about where they are at their life and what they want to say, and then use some of my, you know, strong suits of things I did in my life the right way, wrong way, and just kind of like throw melodies out there. Like co-writing is such a weird thing. I mean, sometimes someone will just say a word, and then like someone will just start a melody, and then all of a sudden you're out of there in 45 minutes. Some days you just pine over it for 6 hours and you still get nothing. Some days you work for 10 hours on it and you think you really got it, and you listen to it the next day, it's terrible. It's really weird. Like I think anyone can be a songwriter. I mean, I know I definitely work at it and try to work at your craft. You know what's right, you know what's wrong, and you have to put, you know, I'm a big emotion guy in it. Like I want to feel the music, and if I'm trying to go in there and write, you know, pickup trucks, moonlight, skull ring, cowboy boots songs, it just doesn't do it for me, because one, I wasn't raised like that, and two, it doesn't have any emotional tie to me. So like, that's why I get kind of not pigeonholed into the deeper songs and stuff like that. Cause She Got the Best of Me was just like, that was more like an anthem kind of thing. But then I have another couple of songs with Luke that are definitely more somber songs, like Dear Today, we wrote out in California, and we tried 15 different, you know, ideas, and we couldn't get anything going. And then finally, Luke came up with the idea. He's like, what if we wrote a letter from yesterday to today to yourself? And I was like, dude, that's great. And then we just, you know, I recently got engaged at the time. He was about to get engaged. So it was pretty cool just the way that whole thing, it was like, you know, quit wasting our sweet time, put that diamond on her hand, call your mom when you still can, all that kind of stuff. And then also with this whole pandemic thing, it's like, we wrote a song with Brent Cobb called 6 Feet Apart. And my friend Alan Sykes in Florida gives me these titles all the time. He's like, oh, you should write a song, you know, and 9 times out of 10, they're not the best ideas. But when he said 6 Feet Apart, I was like, ah, someone's going to do it. And I think Luke would like to do it. And we wrote that on FaceTime in probably like just under 2 hours. And then he played it the next day. It kind of went viral on YouTube. It was like number one on YouTube for a little bit. And then he recorded it 2 weeks, put it out, and it was getting added to radio stations without even like record label approval or anything. Like, they were just putting it out there. And then that's kind of when the world got even crazier with the riots and all that stuff. And then it didn't really make sense to have a song called 6 Feet Apart on the radio when there was, you know, cities being burnt down.
Won't take up much more of your time, but I do want to do something at the end of this, something called This or That. I'm going to give you a couple of different choices. You know, don't want to get too deep. Just want you to pick one, you know, real quick. If you can do an explanation if you want. But so to start it off, songwriting or playing live?
Songwriting. I do enjoy playing, but I just did, I mean, you know, I did that 3-hour, 4-hour set for so long that it was not a labor of love after a while, where you just have to be a jukebox. And I still probably only know probably less. I even when I played downtown, I only knew like the same 30 cover songs. And then it's even hard for me to remember songs I write. I mean, I write like, you know, sometimes 3, sometimes 10 songs in a week. And then people are like, oh, I'll play that song you wrote. I'm like, I got to learn. It's hard because you just go in, do it, and it's a numbers game. You remember the ones that really hit you, but you're just cranking them out. So definitely songwriting for me, because some of those days where you could be having the worst day, worst week, worst month, and you get that song that makes it all worth it, and there's no feeling like it. So songwriting.
All right. Freshwater or saltwater?
Saltwater all day long. I am landlocked in Nashville, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's a little different. We're 4 hours away from any kind of beach or anything of that nature here, so it's definitely different from being in Jersey or Philly.
Man, I mean, just the seafood alone is like, that drives me crazy. But the salt air is so therapeutic. I miss it. I miss it a lot.
All right, Eagles quarterback McNabb or Foles?
Foles. Foles over all of them.
Just because of that ring, right?
Yeah, dude. I mean, and it wasn't just Foles. It was the whole team around him. It was, you know, the coach. And since then, they just dismantled the coaching staff. And Wentz looks like a shell of himself from 3 years ago anyway. It's terrible.
I figured you would say that, but I had to ask. So, Marshall Tucker or Allman Brothers?
I'm going Allman Brothers on that one.
Any reasons?
I just think the more song. I mean, Marshall Tucker has great songs. I mean, you know, not just Can't You See and like all those like ones that, you know, they have great songs. But I think album for album and like the story of the Allman Brothers is incredible. I mean, just like how many people they've lost in the band, like lost their lives and just kept going. And even up to, you know, I've seen them a few times with my dad at the Beacon Theater in New York City. They used to do this like 20 nights in December every year called like Peeking at the Beacon. And I've seen that a couple times, and I just, it's too many family memories. And they were like kind of the soundtrack of my youth. I mean, I think my dad had it's Brothers and Sisters, or I'm trying to think of what album. It's the one album with Mountain Jam on it. It's like a 33-minute song. And he, I mean, it's like he had a CD player and he had three CDs, and that was one of them.
Yeah, there's a couple there that I would have guessed incorrectly on, but I appreciate you doing this for me, Rob and Radwell, and spending some time with us.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
For our listeners out there, if you want to learn more about Rob, head to over to our episode notes at radwell.com. And thank you once again, Rob.
Thank you, brother.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Radwell Rocks. To learn more about Radwell, visit radwell.com or connect with us on social media. To contact us about this podcast, email automationnation@radwell.com. Thanks for joining us.